Support for this News from Lake Wobegon podcast comes from the Sleep Number bed by Select Comfort, the bed that lets you adjust the mattress firmness to your preference, your sleep number. And by Honey Nut Cheerios Cereal, made with whole grain oats. Honey Nut Cheerios Cereal can help lower your cholesterol. Honey Nut Cheerios, be happy, be healthy.
Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, my hometown, up there on the edge of the prairie. The most beautiful days of the year this last week, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, the most perfect September days, warm but with a smell of fall in the air and beautiful blue sky. We went out walking down a road these last few days, and you thought to yourself, what a beautiful, beautiful day, and you knew that it should make you happy, but it made you sadder and sadder. I used to know why that is, and I don't know anymore. Nothing can break your heart like a beautiful day. But if you can't learn to enjoy misery, then you have no business living in Minnesota. There was a man who went up to Lake Wobegon on Thursday, the most beautiful day of the year. He lives in South Minneapolis. His mother came from Lake Wobegon, but he himself had never, ever seen the town. She was a Bakken, but she moved to the city and she married a man named Summers, and her son had never, ever seen where his mother came from. Although there was a stipulation in her will that he would receive the Lake Wobegon Herald Star every week, and he has now for the past 25 years. It's come to him every week. He never reads it. He has no interest in the news in the paper whatsoever. He uses it to start fires and as a dog's toilet. But he thought about it this last week. He is the vice president of a men's clothing company in Minneapolis. That's a very elegant company. And he's worked there for years. He's a very elegant man. He's 48 years old and he's very tall. He's in perfect shape. He loves to wear dark blue suits and black shirts and very elegantly dressed and cufflinks and loafers. But the company recently hired a new president from New York, who came out having snowed the owner of the company by dropping all sorts of famous names from New York and was hired at three times the salary of anybody else in the company, including Mr. Summers, who's the vice president and has worked there since he was in college. The man from New York came in and he was arrogant and cold, dressed all in black and with black hair tied up in a little ponytail in back. And he wouldn't listen to anybody about what was fashionable, and he decided that the new look for this season would be denim, tailored denim, denim trousers, denim suits, denim shirts, and denim bib overalls with pearls on the pockets. Anybody could tell him that this would never go in Minneapolis. Minneapolis is a high fashion city because so many of those people are so recently off the farm. They wouldn't be caught dead in denim. Highest percentage of people dressed entirely in black is over in Minneapolis, because wearing black entirely is your way of saying you don't come from Hinckley. And people in Minneapolis, if anybody thought they were from Hinckley, it would depress them. They would go home and cut their throats. This man from New York came in and took over this company, and it was misery, misery from day one. They couldn't tell him anything. And finally, Mr. Summers negotiated a nice little severance package for himself, and he traded in his stock options, and he quit his job. And he sold his house. He's been divorced for years. He has no children. And he moved to a one-bedroom apartment on the 42nd floor of a building in downtown Minneapolis that looked off to the north and to the west. He wanted to live in this little apartment so that he could travel off to London and Paris, as he had for years on buying trips, until this jerk came out from the east. He moved into this one-bedroom apartment on the 42nd floor, and the week after he moved in, a copy of the Lake Wobegon Herald Star arrived on his doorstep. He had never sent them a forwarding address. It was just there. He was astonished. He opened up the paper and he looked in it, and as he glanced through the pages, he saw his name. His name leaped out at him from a long column about children being confirmed into the Lutheran Church. And then he looked closer at it, and his name had disappeared. He couldn't see it anywhere. He was looking out the window of his apartment building, and now, being on the 42nd floor, he could see out beyond the city, out beyond the suburban slum, out beyond the city, out to the very tip of Hennepin County, out where there were still a few silos and a few church towers. And he was curious to know what that was like out there. He knew what was like out in the suburbs, out in the land of McDonald's and Arby's and Walmart and the freeways and all of those places that if you dropped in for the rest of your life, you would never ever meet anybody you know, because if you went to those places, you would never get to know anybody at all. Out there in the land of lost souls along the freeway, where nobody knows your name and where people's beliefs about the world are whatever they last heard on the television set. But out beyond that seemed to be a real place where those towers were. And one day he got in his car and he drove out beyond the suburbs, out to where the cornfields were. And he just kept on going. And he came to Lake Wobegon. He came through green pastures on this perfect day, cows grazing in the pastures, as in a painting by Corot or Watteau. He came up over the hill and there was the grain elevator. And he came into the town and there was Our Lady of Perpetual Responsibility Church. Mass, Saturday evening at 8 p.m., Sunday morning, 8 a.m., 10 a.m. And there was the cafe, there was the tavern, there was an old department store, the Mercantile. There was a newspaper office. He parked his car and he went into the cafe. There was ugly green carpeting up the stairs going into the cafe. He walked in, the smell of burning coffee and cinnamon rolls and chicken soup. He sat down at the counter, one stool away from a man in a yellow sports shirt and blue plaid trousers. He ordered a grilled cheese sandwich and a Pepsi and a bowl of chili. And as it came to him, he turned to the man in the blue plaid trousers and he said, "It's a beautiful day today, isn't it?" The man said, "Yes, it is. Are you from the cities?" He said, "Yes, but my mother came from here." "Oh, I see," said the man. "What was her name?" "Well, her name was Bakken." "Oh, yes. Well, I knew a lot of Bakkens. Her name wasn't Agnes Bakken, by any chance, was it?" "Yes, it was." "How would you have known her?" "Well, I lived in this town. It would have been hard not to know her. But I knew her parents better. And her stepmother better. They came over from Norway. Her mother died in 26, 27. And Mr. Bakken, my, there was a piece of work. He remarried in 31, I believe." "How did you know them?" said the man. "Well, my father ran the funeral parlor. And my brother runs it now, but I used to help out my dad when I was young." "Yeah, your step-grandmother, she's buried up in the cemetery. She's buried up there, and there's a picture of her on the tombstone. They used to do that, you know." Well, Mr. Summers sat, and he ate his grilled cheese sandwich and his chili. His mother had never, ever told him about the death of her mother or the stepmother. He never knew about this. And his curiosity got the better of him. And he said, "Where is the cemetery?" And the man in the blue plaid pants said, I'll take you up there. It's up the hill." They got in his pickup and they drove up the hill. And on the way up the hill, the man in the plaid pants told him the story of his own family. They came over from Norway about 1925, and their name was Berkeley, but they changed it to Bogen, which is the Norwegian word for hill. They came, the two of them, and their beautiful little daughter, Agnes. They came, and they had no sooner come to Lake Wobegon, and they'd moved onto the farm that he had bought, and they'd gotten in the first crop of hay in the summer, when his wife stepped on a nail, and she got an infection. And in those days, before antibiotics, she died in about a week and a half. And Mr. Bakken, this tall, handsome, silent Norwegian, was so stricken by grief that he put his little child, his beautiful child, in the care of the neighbors, who also took care of his farm, and he set off to the west to assuage his grief. He set off and he sent her postcards from Wyoming and from Utah, from California, from Arizona, the Grand Canyon, and New Mexico, and from Texas. And then the postcards stopped, and there weren't any more for 6 months. She thought he might have died, but he came back. He'd had a terrible accident near Amarillo. He'd bought a beautiful sorrel horse, and he'd gone to work on a ranch, which he'd always wanted to do. Norwegians, deep down, want to be cowboys. And he'd gone out riding in the evening on this sorrel horse, and the horse had stuck his foot in a hole and fell and broke his leg and then fell over on top of Mr. Bogen and broke his leg. He had to cut himself loose, cut his pants leg loose. He had to shoot the horse himself. And then he couldn't go anywhere. His leg was broken. He lay out there for a day and a half, and he got gangrene in that left leg, and it had to be cut off. Mr. Bogen was a Norwegian, and he knew what he wanted, and he was stubborn, and he didn't bother to explain himself to anybody. He decided that he wanted that horse's broken front leg as an artificial leg. And so he got a taxidermist to stuff that leg for him. And they stiffened it with an iron bar, and they fitted it with a strap, and they fit a cushion in there so it would fit on his stump. And he came back on the train to Lake Wobegon, and he got off, and whoever stared at him, he didn't care what they thought. He walked off. He had a boot on his right foot, and there was a hoof on his left. He got off the train, and he picked up his daughter at the neighbor's. He'd been away for 4 years, but he came back as if it had only been 2 days. He brought her back in, and they continued to farm. He was a good man. He was kind to his daughter. He showed her how to handle a hammer and a saw and how to pound in nails. He taught her how to handle a horse. He taught her all sorts of things, how to raise corn and vegetables. And they lived together, and they lived quite peacefully until she was 17 years old. They loved to sit out on the porch in the evening, and he'd talk to her. He never talked about the past at all. He only talked about what they'd do next year and how many calves they'd buy and where the corn should go. He'd sit out there on his rocking chair with his feet up on a cushion there, the boot and the hoof next to it. Until she was 17 years old and she graduated from high school. And then he said goodbye to her, and she knew it was goodbye. They stood on the porch and he said, "Don't tell lies. Don't be a fool, and don't believe in fools. And be thankful for everything that you have, every last thing." And he gave her $100, and he kissed her goodbye. And the next day she left for Minneapolis. She came back only twice to Lake Wobegon, Agnes. She came back, and she was surprised when she came back one year for Christmas that he had remarried. He married a tall woman with fierce black eyes, black hair tied back. A fierce woman who was silent, hardly said a word. Her name was Eva. She brought her husband, Agnes brought her husband, Mr. Summers, back for Christmas. And it was a quiet Christmas. There was no Christmas tree in that home. There was only for dinner boiled potatoes and white fish and bread pudding for dessert. Not much was said. Her husband, when he'd gotten out of his car into the yard and saw his father-in-law walking towards him, limping, a boot and a hoof, was so terrified he couldn't speak. And Eva didn't say anything. Agnes and her father talked a little bit, and then he gave her her Christmas present. She unwrapped it. It was a Bible. It was her mother's Bible. She put on her glasses. It was in Norwegian. She couldn't read a word of Norwegian. It was a strange gift. She put it away. The only other time she came back was for her father's funeral, though she didn't know it would be when she went back. It was in the spring. He had not been feeling well, and she went up there to see her father. She helped him out onto the porch. He was dragging his left foot, the foot with the hoof. He was old and ill. It made a strange scraping sound on the wood floors, as if someone were dragging a chair. She helped him out to the porch, and she was helping him down into his rocking chair, and suddenly he grabbed at her and he made a strange sound and said something in Norwegian, and he fell onto her. She fell backwards. They rolled off the porch into the flower bed, and he was dead. She was so shocked, so distraught. Neighbors came, the hired man came. The undertaker came. She sat there in the porch. She was so shocked and distraught that she didn't notice that her glasses were missing until 2 days later. She went to the funeral home, and there were her glasses on her father's face. He had never worn glasses in his life. The mortician had picked them up where they lay in the flower bed and assumed they were his and put them on him. Well, she didn't want to just reach into the casket and yank them off. But there was no sense in burying a perfectly good pair of glasses with somebody who'd never worn glasses and would need them even less now than he had. So she bided her time, and when the coffin was put into the hearse, she asked the undertaker if she could ride with her father for one last time. He said, fine. She got in back next to the coffin, and as the hearse pulled up the hill toward the cemetery, she eased the lid open, and she reached in for the glasses, and her hand was shaking, reaching in toward her father's face, and she pulled, and as she grabbed the glasses, the lid fell on her arm, and when she lifted it up again, his eyes were wide open, and they were looking straight at her, his pale, pure, cold, blue eyes. She closed the lid and left the glasses right there, and he was buried in them. I never knew that, said Mr. Summers, as the man in the plaid pants was telling him this story. He said, is that the end of the story? The man in the plaid pants said, I never heard a story that had an end, did you? The man got in his car and he drove back to Minneapolis. And he thought now, this was why his mother had never mentioned the stepmother, had never mentioned her mother's death, and never said anything about Lake Wobegon. Because that man's gaze was permanently fixed on her the rest of her life. He came back to his apartment and he looked in a hat box that was filled with his mother's things, and there was the Bible, the Norwegian Bible. He'd never opened it. He opened it and there was a picture, the only picture he'd seen of his grandfather, and those eyes burned into you. Those blue, pure, cold eyes. You looked in those eyes and you couldn't bear to look in them very long. This man who had given her such clear instructions, don't lie, don't be a fool, don't believe in fools, be thankful for everything you have. Who could ever keep such instructions? And now that you looked in his eyes, how would you ever go back and reform your life so that you could? He put the picture back in the Bible. He decided that he would sell this apartment and he would move to California. And he'd never go back to Lake Wobegon again. He's hoping to leave before snow falls this winter. But he's wondering if he goes out there, will the Lake Wobegon Herald Star still come to him every week? That's the news from Lake Wobegon. Where all the women are strong, all the men are good looking, and all the children are above average.
The News from Lake Wobegon podcast is brought to you by Honey Nut Cheerios Cereal. Made with whole grain oats, Honey Nut Cheerios cereal can help lower your cholesterol. Honey Nut Cheerios. Be happy, be healthy.